The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 8778-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome to First Bite, our Detroit Lions midweek podcast, where we bring in a very, very special guest. And we are at the tail end, Ryan, of our unnamed series where we just talk about every Lions draft pick with a beat writer who knows them well. Aiden Hutchinson week. But before we get into all that, my name is Jeremy Reisman. I am the editor-in-chief over at Pride of Detroit, your co-host for First Bite. With me, as always, as I just kind of nodded towards, Ryan Matthews, senior editor of Pride of Detroit, at Ryan_POD on Twitter. Ryan, we made it.
We made it. And then we finally brought someone on to talk about USC and UCLA joining the Big Ten, right?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, thank God.
Yeah. We'll save that for Chris.
Enough takes for the week. But yeah, let's jump right into our guest. He's got so many credits here. I'm not sure how I'm going to fit them all into this podcast, but he's one half of the Beat podcast, which covers University of Michigan and MSU. He's one half of the One of These Years podcast with the great Chris Burke about Detroit Lions football. He was on the Michigan beat for a long time. He was on the Lions beat, and now he's a senior writer for The Athletic, focusing on the NFL draft with that really unfair group of analysts over there at The Athletic. Nick Baumgartner is here. You are, guys. Welcome, man. Thanks for joining us, Nick.
I appreciate it. That was a hell of an introduction, but yes, we are having fun. It's been a lot of fun, especially these last several months. It's really been fun covering the Lions the last year and a half, I would say, right?
You guys
would
agree with that. So, I think there was kind of a delineation.
Yeah, it was bad for a while.
And then really fun.
and then it got interesting, and now, you know, and it's still interesting, which is good, right? So we're happy with that. Yeah.
Well, obviously you're a good guy to talk to here because you've seen Aiden Hutchinson kind of on both sides already. But I want to kind of go back to the beginning there, because I don't think Aiden Hutchinson's recruitment was all that exciting in terms of drama. I think landing him was probably a slam dunk and an easy one, a layup for Jim Harbaugh. But I guess, do you remember kind of the reaction back then as like how special of a talent he was at that point? Was it a shrugging of the shoulders, or was it like, this could be a good dude?
Yes and no. It was a shrugging of the shoulders that he committed, because I don't think anybody, like you said, was surprised. But it wasn't something that was passed over, because two reasons, I would say. One, Greg Madison, who was Michigan's, I believe, defensive line coach at the time, was either defensive coordinator or defensive line coach at Michigan when Chris Hutchinson was playing at Michigan. And Chris Hutchinson has forever been one of Greg Madison's favorite players, maybe his favorite, actually, player, based on his work ethic and the crazy sort of like attacking, like, you know, crazy guy, just never slows down, right? That was Chris Hutchinson, like all gas all the time. And so they thought, this is what we've got, a longer version of that. And so they were very excited about him. I remember that when he committed, and a lot of people, he was not rated, I don't think, super high in the 24/7 stuff. And I almost wondered if he was the type of kid who just didn't camp on a lot of stuff, maybe. I don't know if he did or didn't. But I think it was almost like Michigan knew what they had. They were not surprised at all. And they thought, we're getting a longer version of Chris Hutchinson. That's what everyone there. And Jim Harbaugh was the other thing. He presented, I remember one year, like 2 years later, I want to say after they got the commitment from him, they used to go to the coach's clinic in Lansing. This was before COVID, so they were still doing it in person. And he gave a presentation and to all the high school coaches in the state on like a grading scale of his perfect player, you know, 10 of 10, you know, 1 out of 10 score for like 5 different categories. And the highest grade he'd ever given was to Aiden Hutchinson. That was his like character, hustle, athleticism, all this other stuff. And, you know, it was one of those things at the time where you're like, whatever. Okay, Jim, like, what are you talking about? But then, you know, as time goes on, you're like, well, you know, that kind of plays out. So long way of getting there, but it was one of those things where he was a skinny kid that just sort of had to keep working. But I think everybody knew he was going to be really good.
Well, Nick, you mentioned that, you know, everybody knew that, you know, Hutchinson was going to be a good player. So was there a moment like in spring practice or a game during his freshman year in 2018 that turned your head and said, oh yeah, okay, so now I understand why Jim Harbaugh is rating him 10 out of 10 on everything.
Exactly. Like, I think that it kind of happened quickly too. And to me, it was almost, when I was thinking about this earlier, like the big surprise, or not a surprise, but almost like the head turner, was that he got on the field at all as a freshman, because they were really kind of stacked. They had Rashawn Gary, Winovich, Quiddy Pay, I think some other guys in there too that were draft picks. They were really, really good up front, and there wasn't a lot of room for him. And I think that there was like a, I think they played Nebraska pretty early in the Big Ten season, and Gary got hurt and he got in the game. Hutchinson got in the game and, you know, chucked a tight end and came down the line and just stuffed a run. And he did it like an old guy. He did it like a veteran. And it was like, whoa, he's physically, as a true freshman, ready to go. Like, he was, that is something I remember them being surprised about, that he was physically ready to compete at the Big Ten level his freshman year. I think they thought he was going to need a year to sit completely in redshirt and not even have to worry about playing, but he shows up in camp. And I think that he sort of forced them to put him on the field because he was just, he gained a bunch of weight in the offseason and they were surprised by it. I do remember that.
Flash forward a year and he's a full-time starter at that point.
Yeah.
Kind of dominating in an underrated way because the sack numbers aren't there. What do you kind of attribute to that year two jump? Is it, did he gain weight? Was it just fine tuning, or was it just a matter of him finally getting on the field full time?
That's a really good question. And it's like, it's the opportunity to play, I think. And, you know, the sack numbers, I know that people point at that a lot. And it was a similar conversation with Rashawn Gary, in that both guys were playing that anchor heavy end in that even front Don Brown 4-3 scheme, which was the take on guy. You're playing opposite the tight end and you're taking on tight end tackle. You're taking on double teams. You're taking on a chip. You're doing all sorts of whatever. I don't think Rashawn ever loved it. They didn't make much of a secret about it. Aiden, I think, would have done that until the wheels came off. I don't think he cared.
Right.
And like you said, Jeremy, it was a quiet sort of, like, Quiddy Pay that year, I think, cleaned up a ton because he was getting a lot of, and he played really well too, but he was getting a lot of stuff that I think was being created by Aiden, because he was really doing all the things I think they hoped Rashawn was going to really embrace and just explode through. And Aiden was sort of doing it maybe more so, I think, in that year. He had a better year than Rashawn did at any point, I think, in 2019. And that's when people sort of saw, okay, yeah, he's ready to go. But that's partly why, you know, he blows up, because of the opportunity. But it's also like, you look at it and say the numbers were what they were because, and it's, you know, it's whatever people used to get at me, because I would say that about Gary all the time, but it's like, that's the scheme. That's what he's being asked to do. So that did limit the numbers and limit some of the production numbers, which I think is going to show up. But, you know, as they go forward, they change the defense and a lot of things, you know, improve from there.
Yeah. Well, I guess one thing that doesn't improve is Aiden Hutchinson's availability in 2020, right? I mean, the ankle injury happens, and it almost seems, Nick, a lot like, without having that 2020 season, Kayvon Thibodeau and all these, like, specifically him, rises to the top of the draft boards. But then 2021 happens, right? And, like,
yeah,
I mean, what else is there to say about his 2021 season that ultimately made him, like, the number one pick?
I mean, he just sort of willed it. I think that that's the thing. It was funny to me in the late fall, I guess, or early, maybe almost even winter there, when he became a Heisman candidate almost like overnight publicly, people were like, where did this guy come from out of nowhere? And it's like, well, if you paid attention, you know that it really wasn't overnight. It was an accumulation of just taking games over and over and over again. And the way that they used him, you know, a lot of what they were doing and overloading the weak side of a team and then letting him just hang on the strong side by himself, basically, and saying, you know, come challenge him. I mean, he was just at a focus level, I would say, that I have seen from very few, if any, college athletes. Like, he was at a level of intensity, focus, like It reminded me, I haven't seen any Michigan athlete like that since I've been covering him. He was it in terms of like, I'm here to win and I don't care what anybody, in terms of a football player, I should say. There's some basketball players that have come through, I think, that I've seen that from. But from a football standpoint, he was the, you know, I think that they were telling people in August, like, he's going to have a year that's going to put him in the top five. Absolutely. No question about it. He's ready to go. And you, every time you saw him or talked to him, you could sort of see it in his face and in how he was, I think, hurt and took a lot of personal about what happened with Michigan and himself and everything else the year before. And you could see that really fuel up. And it's interesting, Jeremy, we were talking earlier, like, I could sort of see that when he was walking around out there at minicamp, even some of those availabilities, he doesn't get like surly, but he gets a little like short, you know what I mean? And yeah. Like, he's in a zone. Like, I think that that means he's working, you know? So yeah. That's what I remember most about his senior year. Like, he was in a zone. Like I think few college athletes get to.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that schematic change that happens that year, because I feel like that, yeah, that at least unlocks some of the stats. You know, he got the treatment that Rashawn Gary never right. had the fortunate.
Right. Yeah. He got to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. So what about the switch from Don Brown to Mike McDonald really accentuated, I guess, in strengths?
Yeah, I think a couple things, you know, it allowed some versatility to show up. You know, they moved him around, and, you know, Don Brown, you know, they moved him around some there too. He rushed inside, and that's going to help him out. And it did help him out with the Lions, of course, but they moved him around more in space and showed off more of that agility and more of that, you know, closing speed that he's got. And I think the one big thing that was sort of underrated that I'm not sure it was planned was that when you stand him up opposite Ojabo, who everybody knows is this quick twitch, like all gas, and then you let him go and you're like, well, geez, I mean, like, it's really not that different. Like, him and Aiden are running about the same clip. It's, you know, it's not. And you could sort of see, I think, or at least scouts, I think, started to see, like, whoa, like, he is way quicker and maybe faster and, you know, got more burst than we probably thought. Plus, he's in the best shape of his life. Plus, he's like adding strength at a pretty crazy pace. And he's got that compact body and all that twitch. So I think that, yeah, they showcased more of it. And I'm not sure it was by design. It was just sort of a thing that happened. But it was like right place, right time for everybody, including Mike McDonald. As you see what happened to him, right. He turned it into a terrific career move. But I mean, yeah, I mean, more than anything, it just really showcased everything he can do. They just let their best player be their best player. And that's what happened. And, you know, that's why they had the season they did.
Yeah. So, Nick, I think the next thing we want to do, right, Jeremy, is maybe debunk some narratives or you can agree with.
Or we can confirm them.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. We'll throw a little game in the middle here.
Yeah. Why don't you kick it off, Jeremy?
Okay. Aiden Hutchinson is a one-year wonder because he only had a lot of sacks his senior year.
That's a false narrative. Yeah, that's a false one for the reasons we sort of touched on, right? Like, sure. I think that you do have to go back and look at his underneath career, you know, the 2019 season. 2018, he barely plays because they're stacked. You can't take that away from him, and that's real. 2019, he was great, but he's playing in a role that isn't really sack required, we'll say. Gets hurt in 2020 and then is awesome in a role that requires him to get after the quarterback. So I think that there are questions, fair questions, about his ceiling as a pass rusher in the NFL, but the better value with Aiden Hutchinson is the full, complete player. And I think that you have to look at all the things with him. So, no, false narrative. He's not a one-year wonder.
Do you think if he had not returned to Michigan for the 2021 season, do you think there's a chance like he could have still been a first-round prospect?
I do. Yeah, it's a really good question. And, like, I was – you know, I think about that a lot because there was some narrative going around at the time, like in December, like he thought he wasn't going to get drafted or he was going to be like a second day for a day two pick. And he didn't know. And I'm like, that might be a bit dramatic. Like, I think everybody knew he was good, you know, but, you know, it would have certainly put in jeopardy and question if he's certainly a first round talent all the way. Everybody knew that. But yeah, maybe he would have slipped out. But I mean, there's no way he would have gone beyond the second round. I don't know why that got a little Tom Rinaldi-ish for my taste there at the end of the year when they were like, hey, no, it went from like not even being on draft boards. I'm like, I don't think that's true. But you know, either way, yes, obviously coming back helped. Yeah.
Well, so speaking of ceilings, right, and what Aiden might be pushing against at the next level, I think that there was this narrative that was constructed during draft season of Hutchinson can't be the Bosa's because he doesn't have the bend that they have,
right?
Doesn't quite have the athleticism that maybe they have. So there's this perceived idea that Hutchinson at his most impactful cannot match the Bosa level of production at the next level. Fact or fiction on that?
Yeah, that's fiction. I would say, I think that you have to put that as a fiction in terms of a narrative, because obviously he's got to go prove it. But I mean, the athletic testing, his best athletic comparisons are the Bosa's. I mean, that's it all the way. Like, in terms of the Bosa's have longer arms, by, you know, whatever, a couple, I don't think they have crazy longer arms, but they're obviously more standard length, but everything else, including the agility stuff and the burst and the strength and the speed, it's almost identical. I mean, like, he is, in my mind, in a lot of ways, and I thought this for a couple of years now, because I saw both Nick and Joey at Ohio State up close there for as long as they were there. Aiden is much more like Nick. I thought Joey was the most dominant one I saw, but like, he's in that ballpark. I think he's on that dance floor. And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't know why that narrative held, right? Like, I was surprised that there were that many people that were surprised at his testing numbers. I guess that there were many people that were like, I can't believe he's fast. I'm like, really? Like, did you watch him at all? Like,
what? It really persisted, though. It really persisted that there was this idea that, like, you mentioned, Nick, like, they're on the same dance floor, but it's like, who's going to get crowned king at the end of the night? Like, a lot of people said that can't be Aiden Hutchinson. He won't be the Bosa's. But, like, I mean, like you said, a lot of the athletic testing will put that to bed.
I mean, it's pretty close. I mean, it's a pretty close comp. I mean, that would be, you know, if you're going to do just the straight 30,000 foot comp, it's one, pick your pick. I mean, Aiden is one of the two Bosa's, if not a hybrid of both, almost, in some weird way.
All right, this next narrative, I'm not going to say it all came from Michigan State fans, but it probably did.
I'm sure a chunk of it did.
The Georgia game.
Yeah.
Big red flag for him.
Well, I don't think it was a big red flag, no. I mean, obviously, he's been, you know, he doubled and chipped. And more than that, Georgia's game plan, I think, was specifically designed to just everything away from him. Everything away from him. Don't even mess with him. Leave him alone. Although I would say, you know, I don't think you can totally write it off as totally irrelevant, because when we're talking about a number one overall pick, and he went number two, but we're talking about a number one overall player, or we're trying to define someone as, if, are you generational? Are you a guy that, like, we can just stamp it right now and say he is going to be a badass for 15 years. He would have found a way to make an impact in that game. He would have, I don't know if it would have been enough to wreck it or do anything, but you would have felt him in that game. I, you know, it's a different conversation completely, obviously, but like, the thing that just popped into my head when Mike Vick's playing Florida State in the national championship game all those years ago, and they get their Virginia Tech gets the crap kicked out of him, but he was awesome. And everybody's like, well, look at this guy. Right. And so, like, that's the type of stuff that I think that the criticism can be sort of fair, because we're talking about, is he generational, not is he good?
Right.
like, yes, he is a terrific football player, absolutely worthy of that spot. That is a false narrative, but I don't totally dismiss it, because that brought in some of that question that we talked about during the draft process of, like, you know, what is his ceiling? I don't know. You know, we know his floor is pretty good, but I think, you know, we still have to see some proof, I think, from him out there. And I think he knows that, and that's part of his drive and everything else too.
You want to get one more in here, Ryan, before we go to break?
Well, I guess I just want to take it back to a question that we can ask about Hutchinson as a person. We had a chance to talk to him real quick during,
Combine? I think it was Combine week, wasn't it?
Combine, It was during Combine week, So he's doing, you know, probably 100 different press runs, right? But he comes off as this guy who's like very curt. He seems like he's reserved, almost, Jeremy has here in the notes, well-trained, boring, maybe. But like you alluded to a little bit earlier, Nick, you mentioned that, like, you know, maybe some of that is just him being so locked in. But like, what about, like, is he just kind of that reserved person, and then on game day, he just turns it on and the guy eats, sleeps, and breathes football, or what?
There's definitely some laboratory to Hutchinson in terms of how he's presented to the public. You know, his parents are both very media savvy, I would say. Like, his dad is a very smart guy, obviously, like, played at Michigan, would have been an NFL you know, big timer if he hadn't got hurt, and he's been a doctor, so they're, you know, I think his mom is involved in media in some way, shape, or form, but they've always been very savvy with how he's presented and all this sort of stuff. So I think all of that is absolutely very calculated. Yes. How he presents himself to the public and all of that. But You know, I don't know if it's something that ever, I had questions about it early on at Michigan, honestly. Like, I would see that from his family, and I would, like, because it's very tight-lipped and like, hey, we're all here for Aiden, and it's like a team Hutchinson almost, which can rub people the wrong way. I mean, that's, you know, in some locker rooms that can rub people the wrong way, and I looked to see if that would be the case, and I don't think it was. I think that the guys at Michigan liked him. I think that everything I could kind of vibe there was they respected how hard he worked. They liked him. He was one of the guys. He loved playing there, of course. And as demanding as his dad is, and as sort of like, you know, cut and dry, or, you know, neat and trim as the family presents everything for his brand and all that, I guess we could talk about that now as brand, but like, I do think, I don't think that that's necessarily, I can't speak to it all the way, but the guys seem to like him. I think that, and we can see that a little bit out at camp, that mini camp, that the young guys that were out there working with him, he seems to fit in well and get along. I mean, when they go out there and play, I think for him is when he gets along really well with everybody, because he's not really afraid and he just cuts it loose and goes.
Have you ever kind of seen the Mets slip a little bit though? Like
only when they're playing,
like only when they're playing.
Yeah. They don't let, you know, Michigan would never let us go to practice, obviously. Right. So like, and I will say this, there was one time, one of my like most vivid Aiden Hutchinson media memory from college is actually, I guess it was 2019. They lost at Wisconsin in a horrible, they just got the crap kicked out of him. It was really bad. And he was young and they brought him in there and he was like beat red in the face. And he was like almost unhinged to a point where I was like, I'm surprised they let him out here. I think he's about to swear or do something like, and I could tell how, you know, like bothered he was and upset he was by the performance and the loss and everything else. And you could see that, you know, it was like bubbling underneath, but he was keeping himself like, I can't, you know, lose it here or whatever in front of everyone. So I think he's cognizant of it, but I definitely think you see the paint on his face, the war paint, you see the clip of him talking trash at Ohio State. Like that's how he is on the field. That all shows up in every drill he does too. But yeah, it's a weird juxtaposition, right? Cause it's like, that's not who you are. Like, I mean, but
he compartmentalizes.
If you want to process, if that's what you want to present, that's fine. Yeah, can't argue.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to switch to more projection, where Aiden Hutchinson is going to play, how well he can play, ceiling, all that sort of stuff. When we come back on First Bite, here with Nick Baumgartner from The Athletic. Stick with us. We'll be right back. And we are back here on First Bite talking Aiden Hutchinson with Nick Baumgartner from The Athletic, both on the Lions and Michigan beat in his history now, working as kind of the main, not the main, but like I said, part of an awesome team over there at The Athletic, talking about the NFL draft. Let's get back into Aiden. And here's a question I've received a couple times, and I'm curious your thoughts. We saw Aiden with his hand in the dirt in that 2019 season where he had that breakout year. He was more off the edge and off the ball. In 2021, when he has a breakout season so far. I mean, we've seen the Lions use him a little bit of everywhere, but mostly with his hand is in the dirt. Do you have any concern that they're maybe not maximizing his skill set there?
No, I mean, it's too early probably to get into that area, but I almost think you do have to be careful, because I think you actually have to sort of do it in shifts. They were doing, I think, a little bit more than it almost looked. He was flipping back and forth, going from, you know, sort of following the tight end. So he's playing on either side of the formation, the heaviest, you know, side of whatever, whichever it would, you know, shake out in whichever front they were in. But he was also moving inside some and playing and rushing from the three tech too. So I think it's very interesting. And I'm very curious to see how much they put on his plate, like in the first couple of weeks of camp, because long term, you're right. You want to do everything with him because he has the ability to do that. But like, the question becomes is, you know, how fast does he pick up, you know, A and B before you can go to C? And I think that that'll be, you know, the true test. And it was encouraging, I think, if you're the Lions, to see how fast he sort of worked his way from the sort of the scout team on the opposite field in minicamp to he was with the starters by the end of minicamp. I mean, and he was clearly, you know, one of the best, you know, 11 or 15 guys they had out there. So very curious to see how his first 2 weeks of like contact go in training camp And then maybe, you know, do we see them experiment more with him outside? But also, you know, I thought about that too. Like Julian Okwara's got to get more reps out there. I think James Houston's a guy they want to see. Jared Davis is a guy that's going to get reps out there too. So right now, I think, and this will probably hold through camp now that I'm thinking about it, and people might have this question again, it might be best, you know, for them to sort of say, hey, let's pick two things for you to sort of master here before we go on to three or four, because we also need to work other guys, you know, sort of on that, you know, spatial edge, stand up and run sort of thing too. So it'll be interesting to see, but I think that I would almost defer to the, you know, go a little slower with him and not try to overload it too much, because he's going to have a lot on his plate, right? Like local kid playing here, all that. I mean, that's going to be a lot, even for a kid who can be a little robotic. I think that that's still going to be a lot to digest for him when it really gets going.
Do you have a follow-up for that, Jeremy?
Sure. Yeah. Like, so you did mention like you don't want to overload him, but do you still use him as like a, I mean, you still probably obviously want him out there as much as possible as rookie year, not only to learn, but just because he's one of your best players. So where would you move him around at, on certain special, you know, when it comes to like,
I think right scenarios? Now, right. Yes. I think right now I would like on in rush downs, I would be interested to see him rushing inside more than I would outside almost. I would be interested to see him up against a guard. Like if depending on the matchup, but if you're playing a team where they've got, you know, maybe a pair of guards who's big and strong and tough and they're not as quick, like I'd like to see that, like let him work a guard opposite like Levi or something. I think that could be really interesting. And then you could also put, you know, speed out there. You could say Charles Harris, Julian Okwara, Aiden Hutchinson, and Levi. Those are your four on a rushdown. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Now you're cooking, right? So like, I think that those are the situations I would look to see if how many times I could get Hutchinson, Julian, and Charles Harris on the field together in rush spots. Cause I think you could do it in a lot of different ways. Romeo too, really. I mean, once he's healthy, you could work those guys in a bunch of different combinations and sort of, you know, games and twists and all that sort of thing. But I think I would really like to see what he can do inside in the NFL. Cause I think his future obviously is going to be everything else out there. But I think the big value that unlocks is, can he play, you know, from center all the way out? And I think that he has the potential to maybe do that. And, you know, we'll see some of that early here in camp.
And in base, you just kind of expect him to be out there on the edge, because he's such a, I mean, we were talking all about his pass rush. He's a fantastic run defender too.
Yeah. He's a first, second down, you know, get on the strong and play with the tight end. Like that's what I think he's going to do, is wherever the tight end goes, he's going to be with the tight end, you know, against the run on first and second down. And then third down, you get creative. And that's where, you know, we'll see. Hey, I mean, if he goes into camp and, you know, has developed more rush moves or something, maybe that is something where they start walking him out and he's doing more of that. I don't know. But, you know, I think based on what we saw and how much Aaron Glenn talked about how excited he was with everything he could do inside, I would think that they're going to have plans there, you know, for him to do that this year quite a bit.
So obviously a guy as versatile as Hutchinson is, I mean, you think about a lot of the positives and a lot of the pros to just having him on your football team. And you just went at length, Nick, talking about how versatile he can be. And, you know, one of the things that kept on creeping up as to why you want to draft him at the top of the draft is he has this like never ending motor. And a thing that I think he talked about a lot in the pre-draft process was he talked a lot about like speed to power and how he can get that done. When you're talking about Aiden Hutchinson, what do you think right now at this stage in his career is his best like technical trait that will show up on game days?
That's a great point. Yeah, because it can't just be the motor, right? And that's the thing that everybody defaults at with guys like this. But I think the thing that he has, and everybody fixated on that, on those long arms, I think he's the short arms, I should say. I think he's a full body athlete. Like his arm speed is legit. Like he gets off the ball, first step is powerful and fast and assertive, and he knows where he's going. It's like, it's not like the speed to power is a rush move, but Aiden Hutchinson is powerful speed. That's just what he is. He's like a, you know, he's metal that moves fast almost in a weird way. Like the hand twitch and the ability to sort of shake and get guys off of him to where the punch sometimes is just irrelevant. And he will be bothered by length in the NFL, guys that can move outside that are long. I mean, that's a thing. His arms are short. That's not a lie. That's going to be a thing. But the reason why it doesn't matter more often than not is, you know, he gets inside of you a lot faster than you get inside of him. His technique is very consistent and very good inside, especially against the run. And I think that's what, combined with that effort, makes him very difficult to run the ball. I mean, it's just, that's what he does for you. When I was boiling it down, that's what won him over for me over Thibodeau every single time, where it was like, I trust him against the run 10 times out of 10 right now, tomorrow, than I would over Kayvon in any situation. Pass rush is a different conversation, but against the run, and that is super important. And we always fixate on, you know, the closer and getting off the field, but like, you got to play first and second down too. So yeah, I think that's where the strength is right now for him. And it's about expanding out to being more of a, you know, playmaker on the outside.
Well, yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. Maybe the points where he might struggle early on. Is it with those long arm pass protectors? Is it maybe, does he have a lack of pass rush moves at this point? Does that need to be more developed in this game?
I think both. You know, I think that, you know, when you're playing against some of the big tackles with length that can move outside and have the agility to match you and can kind of recover athletically, now he's gonna have to figure that out. Like, I think that's something that's gonna take some time. Like, you can see a couple of those. Like, you know, there was a couple of moments early last season where Sewell was getting beat on a few things that he had to fix, because it was like, you just need to see it.
Right.
So I think there's some of that that he's going to have to see, you know, for himself. But I just, in general, yes, his pass rush plan needs to be more, I think, probably polished. A lot of it in college was just the straight speed to power. I'm going to attack your outside shoulder with all I've got and just run your ass over. And it worked more often than it didn't. And, you know, I mean, a lot of it was hustle too. I mean, he gets a lot of sacks and TFLs because he's just playing harder than everybody else. So it's got to be about more than that. He's got to have a more refined rush plan. And that, for a guy like Hutchinson, who's going to be asked to do an awful lot, is going to be a big challenge. Like, that's going to be for him, I think, the difference from going from good to great, like the extra couple percentage points, you know, to really max out as everybody looks back and says, that was a great pick at number two. He's going to have to be a guy that gets sacked. He's going to have to be a guy that, you know, produces, you know, and helps you get off the field and more than just, you know, really sturdy rundown stuff. So, you know, that's, I think, the biggest test is, are you going to continue to grow as a pass rusher? Keep focus on your technique and everything else there, but there's going to be counters and things that we don't even know yet that he's going to have to deal with, that he's going to have to learn in time. But, you know, that's something that, you know, I think everybody goes through.
Yeah, and Nick, you talk about a lot of those expectations in terms of sack numbers and things like that. And I was just looking at my phone to make sure DraftKings still has him as the odds on favorite to be the defensive rookie of the year. but Kayvon Thibodeau isn't too far behind.
Right.
Hutchinson at +500 and Thibodeau at +550. But, you know, to live up to that kind of expectation, like what are you expecting out of, you know, Hutchinson in terms of year one? And I hate to ask you for statistics, but maybe ballpark.
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's like, for me, if he's going to be at his level that we would say he's like at rookie of the year level or defense rookie of the year level, then that would mean that they are a good run defense. That would mean that we are all looking at the entire package and saying his presence improved them, and we can see it. We can see it in the numbers.
Right.
It wouldn't necessarily be his numbers, but it would be like, they're harder to run against. They're in more third and longs because they have a better edge defender, you know, playing against the run. That to me is, I think, how I'll probably judge him or grade him. In terms of sacks and everything else, I think I wouldn't look at the sacks necessarily for him right now because I don't know where they're going to play him. For me though, I would look at just tackles. How many tackles is he involved? And that's something I wouldn't say often, but for a guy like that, a lot of it's going to be effort. And like, how much is he involved? How much is he getting involved in the play? I think it's, are you running back to the ball? Are you scraping down? You know, are you trying to find your way in on everything? That was part of the appeal, you know, for Aiden. So I think you look at a guy like that, that's so active. I would like to see him in on, you know, if he's going to be out there a bunch, 60 something tackles somewhere in there, maybe higher if he's going to be out there a lot. You want him to be an active, you know, defender that is involved in everything. And I think ultimately that's where he needs to go. I don't know, you know, I don't want to put a number on it one way or the other, but you should feel everyone else's job getting easier because he's out there. And I think that's kind of the thing that I look at the most.
And I find that to be such an interesting point, Jeremy, because how often do we talk about tackle numbers are as good as whatever you wipe yourself with? Right. You know what I mean? Like, but
they almost always are.
It almost always is, but I think it's such an interesting and a point I really hadn't thought about, Nick, in terms of how you can grade him, is because if he's making tackles, he's making plays at the line of scrimmage, right? It's not a linebacker's tackle numbers, or it's not a safety's tackle numbers.
Exactly. That said, he's definitely making at least 5 tackles 20 yards downfield, right? Like, that's just going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, like, all of it. You want all of it. I looked at, I mean, he was like, that was a big thing that stood out for me when he was at Michigan. Like, you want all of it. You want him chasing people down and being like, no, you're not going to just let this guy run around back here and like sit here for 20 minutes. He's going to go get him. Like, get off the field. Yeah. Like, that's Aiden. Yeah. And I think that's,
you're going to have to use another 4 downs to score on.
Yeah, right. Get him off. You're going to have to drag his lifeless body off, because he's not going to just run out of gas. And I think that's what you want to see, you know, from him in year one, for sure.
Well, I hate to do this to you, because obviously predicting the future is just not a good business in the NFL. But if you had a ceiling and a floor for Aiden Hutchinson's career in the NFL, what would they be?
Well, ceiling would be a star. He would be a star. He would be a, you know, all pro perennial, you know, guy that we think of as a Bosa type, you know, guy that you set your watch to. He's going to be a really good, you know, defender who's going to be on a championship level defense that you can build around, which is all package, which is he's rushing the quarterback. He's impacting the run. He's doing everything. And the floor, I think, is that, and that's the fear that you have with him, is that he's a good run defender who just doesn't do it, you know, with the sacks and the pass rush. But I don't think he's ever going to be worse than a good run defender. Same time, you look at that and you say he's the number 2 pick in the draft. So it's got to be more than just you're a good run defender. You've got to be probably at least a great run defender, right? So I think I look at that and say, you know, absolute floor barring injury, you know, he'd be a guy that plays in the league for a good long while and is a good player, but maybe isn't, you know, game wrecking or whatever else. But the ceiling, he can get to that. I think he can get to star level, all pro, Bosa level, you know, type player that we think of as maybe not a 20 sack a year guy, but a guy that, you know, if he's on the defense you're playing against, it's going to be a tough day. It's going to be a long day, and he's going to make sure of it. And I think that's Aiden Hutchinson in a nutshell at this point.
That's Nick Baumgartner over at The Athletic. You can find him at Nick Baumgartner on Twitter. Where else can they find you, and what sort of stuff do you have in store for The Athletic?
We got all kinds of stuff at theathletic.com, the Lions page. I'll have more college football stuff coming later this summer. Right now, everyone's on vacation, but we're going through a lot of the draft prospects to watch before the college season. I'm going through ACC stuff right now. So more stuff going on this summer. But it'll pick up.
You're talking Jeremy's language, man.
those crazy 2023 mocks are already coming out in the works.
Well, no, we're just slowly going through it. We'll crank the pressure up in late season, as you know. But we'll get there one day at a time, Jeremy.
Well, speaking of which, one of these years, make sure you listen to his podcast over there with Chris Burke. Excellent. I always listen to every episode. And the Beat podcast for both you Michigan and Michigan State fans. Absolutely. But until next time, thank you, Nick, for joining us. Thank you, Ryan, as always. My name's Jeremy. Thanks for listening. Until next time, it's chaos. Be kind.